Because revivals do not begin with services, and they do not begin with praise, and they do not begin with preaching, and they do not begin with any of those things. It begins with simply an ability for me to forgive and be forgiven. It is at that heart of it that everything begins. You can call it repentance. You can call it humbling yourself. You can call it whatever you want. But it is a forgiving of everything. And it is a asking of forgiveness for everything. And at that point, then we can be revived, or we can have places in our lives where we can go forward. I want to show it to you. Jesus, we were in Mark, the 10th chapter, beginning at verse 1. I'm not going to go back and read all of that, but that's our kind of our layout for what we're dealing with these 3 weeks. We have dealt with marriage or relationships for these 3 weeks. Not so perfect marriage. A not so perfect relationship. And in Mark, the 10th chapter, we kind of jumped off in this, and we dealt the last 2 weeks with fundamental truths that have to happen. First, I have to understand that the person I'm in relationship with is different from me. Whether it's my husband, my friend, my co-worker, no matter what it is, they are different from me. Their upbringing, their way they see life, the things that they do. So when I enter into a relationship, I am entering into a relationship with someone who doesn't see life or do life exactly like I do. They don't see situations the way I do. They can make mistakes and don't even see the severity the way that I do. They are different in every aspect, in certain aspects, as I am. Now, that's why it's so important to pick somebody that already has certain criteria that will match up. That's why the Bible speaks of do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Why? Because if you go to that extent trying to build a relationship, you've got absolutely nothing to build on. We're not going to have anything in common. But even when I choose another believer, even when I choose another person who's saved, I'm still got to deal with the fact that they are different. The way they understand the Bible, or the way they've read certain scriptures, or the way they've been taught in Sunday school, or whatever it might be. So the first thing that I realize in relationship, especially a married relationship, is that me and the other person is different. Number two, we dealt with last week, is that when that happens, I have to make sure one thing is consistent. That is the communication that me and this other person is going to have. We must continue dialogue. We must continue connecting. We must continue so that there doesn't become an isolation and we begin to just, in our own minds, picture what they're thinking and picture what they're feeling and picturing what they're really trying to do. And we start building this whole scenario and we start becoming isolated and separated. Now, I told you that I can fix any marriage in 30 minutes. I also said that it might take 6 months to years for a person to actually do what I tell them to do. That, the fix is not a problem. If I said the first two today, look, first thing you want to do if you want to keep a marriage together is to understand we are different. Secondly, we must continue to communicate in the middle of this, and that's the way it is. And people will look at me and say, okay, Pastor, we can do that. We've been talking a little better. We've been doing a little better. Well, now we get to number three. This is the meat of everything that allows marriages and relationships to function. It is how and the way and the purpose by which I do reconciliation or resolving conflicts. Look at the person beside you and say, how do you resolve conflicts? How you resolve conflicts in your life will determine everything about the relationship, the depth of the relationship, or the survival of the relationship. Most of us coming into marriages or relationships, we already have a certain way of winning fights. We already have a certain way of fighting. There's some of us that are total withdrawers. When we get into conflict, we just shut the other one out. We shut them down. We just avoid them, ignore them, and we just treat them like dirt until they finally come and see it our way. Some of us just throw temper tantrums. We hit the walls and ram our cars into trees, and we just act like a total idiot until they finally submit to our whims. Each one of us comes in because it worked with our parents. It's worked through high school. It worked through college. It worked up till now. And since I'm locked in with this person, they just need to see it my way. They need to see life. They need to understand it. And maybe if I get into conflict, I just go get drunk. That's just my... And the reason I got drunk, it's all your fault. If you hadn't have caused me to do this... So we become blamers. We really are responsible for nothing. Our problem is everybody keeps making us do bad things. It's your fault I'm dipping. It's your fault I cheated. It's your fault I cussed. It's your fault I did this. It's the drinking that makes me do it. It's the drugs that caused me to do it. Are you out of your mind? You are just trying to win an argument using the system you've always used. Conflict is a lot deeper than that. That's the reason marriages have problems now in severity. That's the reason relationships have problems, because we don't want to change the way we fight. We don't want to change the way we argue. We don't want to change the way we communicate. And because of it, we can't understand why there's so much conflict, why we have to hide so much. It's because we can't be open and honest. If we do, then we're going to have to deal honestly with a conflict. Let me show you this. When you deal with conflict, there's three areas in which we have to deal with. First, we have to understand anger itself. We have to understand anger, or we cannot deal with conflict. Number two is that we will have to confront the conflict. And then thirdly, when it's all said and done, when we have understood why we're angry, when we have confronted it, we will have to either forgive or be forgiven. These are three areas that must happen every single time. Let's go to this first. Understanding anger. Now, there are certain ways in which you deal with your anger. Maybe you're a stuffer. Look at the person beside you and say, are you a stuffer? Now, a stuffer does this. They just internalize everything. They just withdraw. They just deal rejectedly. They just walk away. They go watch the TV. They just go off in their little corner of the world. They are not going to deal with the anger, but how they've learned to deal with anger, maybe they had a very dominating family. They weren't able to express it. They were just told, listen, you better hush while you're still ahead. I'm going to knock a hole in you. And because of that, they've learned to not deal with anger. You could get hurt if you stand up for yourself. You could get slapped. So you've learned to just deal rejectedly. You've learned to show your disapproval by not stepping forward. You've learned by just withdrawing. And somebody will come along and say, what's wrong with so-and-so? They haven't acted right lately. They just haven't. What it is, they're trying to let you know, I'm hurt. I'm rejected. They're trying their best way. They're not going to come out and say it. They just may walk around and be quiet for 2 or 3 days. What's going on with so-and-so? I don't know. They just hadn't felt good the last few days. No, there's a conflict. There's a problem in them that they don't want to resolve openly because they don't know how or don't feel comfortable. So what they do is they go inwardly. They deal with it inwardly. Now, this can work for a while unless you really are dealing with a lot of stress or a lot of problems. And then it can explode or it can cause enormous health problems. Do you know that they say that almost 90% of the people that get sick are sick because of stress related? It is simply because you have sit there and internalize. You sit there with stress, and it's war on your heart, and it's war on your kidneys, and it's war on your lungs, and it's war on everything. And then you start eating more than you used to. I don't really want to eat, but it deals with my... I just feel better when I'm full. And what you've done, you've internalized every single thing without dealing with the problem. Now, I want to give you a scripture that will help you. And this is something you're going to have to get in your heart. In Matthew, the 5th chapter and the 9th verse, there's a specific scripture that you need to understand it and not just read it. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons or daughters of who? Or in other words, people that see these people will say, if I ever met a Christian, there's a Christian. If you want to have a calling card that people will know that you are real, that you really are a Christian, that you really do have the goods, then you will have to be a peacemaker. Look at the person beside you and say, not a peacekeeper. Not even a peaceful person. Go ahead and tell them, not even a peaceful person. I am a peacemaker. A peacemaker is someone that in time people will say about them, if I ever met a Christian, there is somebody that is a Christian. Now the world will try to form you into a peacekeeper. Oh, I thought you Christians, y'all supposed to love everybody. We do love everybody. We hate sin, but we love everybody. Now, if you're too tied up in that sin, we might have to separate you and the sin from me. It isn't because I hate you. It's just because I'm a peacekeeper. It's in our mindset to be a peacemaker in life. Now, that causes us problems, especially for this first person who is a inward withdrawal. We want to go in our prayer room. We want to cry out, God, I don't know what to do with my husband. God, I don't know what to do with my wife. God, I'm doing all I can deal with. I'm praying for them. I'm holding them up. You ever thought about coming out of the closet and looking them in the eye and say, we need to talk? I don't know what would happen. Nothing more is going to happen any more than in that closet doing nothing. Because even if God gets involved, He's got to have a peacemaker to come along. Now, what we hope for, let's just be honest, we hope that He'll meet somebody at work who will tell Him He's doing wrong. We hope that she will have a friend, or we'll call Pastor Lott and we'll say, Pastor, you need to talk to so-and-so. They're not acting right, and they're not treating me good. And would you go talk to them and tell them how biblically they're supposed to act? Come on now. We don't want to be a peacemaker. We just want peace. We just want somebody to fix it for us so that we don't have to deal with it. But biblically, we are peacemakers. Now, the problem is that there's a second type. There's a stuffer. There's also a blower. There's also blowers. Now, they go to the other extreme. They deal with aggressiveness and anger and hostility. You just, when they come at you, you're just like, whoa. You don't know if they're going to shoot you, hit you. You don't know. They just blow up. And that's their way of trying to let you know, I am angry right now. I am upset right now. And you just need to get away from me because I'm not responsible for what I do. Well, that's not true because the Bible says, be angry but sin not. So you're still in control. You're just looking for an excuse so that you can act out because you're angry and you're not an inward person. You're one of those that when I meet you, well, brother, Lott, I just tell it like it is. I just say it the way. And so guess what? When you get angry, you just tell it like it is. You just let it all fly. You just let it all hang out. And neither one of these resolves anything. Then thirdly, there's the compromiser. This person gets angry, and they have to draw back for just a little bit, but they have to get it in their head. Well, you know, they find excuses and reasons for the other person, and they, in AA and all these other type places, we have a title for that person. It's called an enabler. You keep excusing their stupidity. You keep loaning them money when you know they're not. You just keep compromising with them and compromising with them. And you keep hoping that one day they will resolve the issue. And one day you just wake up and you got no more money. And you can't let them stay in the house anymore because the cops have come in and tore out the walls looking for the drugs. And you have to look at them with tears in your eyes and say, you got to go. I mean, really, you got to go. But you don't love me. And then that breaks their heart. But I do love you. I've done everything. No, if you loved me, if you really loved me, you wouldn't throw me out. I'm not throwing you out. I'm asking you to leave. The cops will throw you out. And so one of these three is what we have been raised in, how we have taught ourselves to deal with problems and conflicts in our life. Now be honest, look at the person beside you and tell them which one you are. Go ahead. If you're not going to be honest, ain't no use in going, just tell them. If you don't know, ask them. If they're sitting by somebody that knows you, just ask them, what am I? They'll tell you, you blow up like a steam engine. Well, they may look at you and say, everybody knows you're mad, but you just try to just play it like it ain't nothing happened. Everybody knows it. Or maybe they look at you and say, you know what? You just don't want to deal with it. You're just constantly compromising with issues. And then you come to me complaining like life ain't no good. And you keep calling me every week and saying, I don't know how I got into this mess. And I don't know why. And you just got to quit compromising. Look at the person beside you and tell them, you got to be a peacemaker. I told you I could fix any marriage in 30 minutes. May take 6 months or longer for you to do it. Because these things are not easy. It is not easy dealing with conflict. James 1 and 19 says it the way we said it last week. But everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. There's nothing wrong with anger. Anger is a good emotion. It's a God-given emotion. God, the Bible says many times in His Word, got angry. But the problem is that it must be dealt with in a correct way. When God gets angry, He gets angry to bring things back to where they should be. Not to win, not to overpower, not to prove who He is. He gets angry only because things are in such disarray that we must deal with this. And I need you to know that I'm serious. Ephesians 4 and 26 says, be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your... Now see, the problem is that, brother, like, I do blow up. But you're still mad later. But you still compromise the next day. If you know if you're dealing with your anger correctly, here's how you know it. There's no more of it come bedtime. If at bedtime you still got some, then it never got dealt with. The hardest times in me and Elisa's marriage is at 10 o'clock at night. When the day has gone on and we have avoided or not wanted to or just got into it at 4 that afternoon, and then we have to talk before the sun, before I can roll over. And we know we're avoiding it. She just goes to the bathrooms getting ready, and I'm sitting in it watching TV or whatever. And it's like, we know we've got to deal with this. The sun cannot go down on this. The problem is I may be up till 2 in the morning resolving this. Because I've got to do my part, she's got to do her part, and then we've got to come to a resolution. Because if I sleep on it, and the more I think about it, the more I'm right. And if you give me a week or two, I can tell you 100 reasons why I'm right. I know none of you are like that. I'm just telling you the way I am. That's why the Bible makes it specific. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. It's not trying to tell you, just solve something. He's trying to tell you, don't let that fester. Don't let that set up for 5 years. Don't let 2 years from now you get in an argument and they bring up something you did 2 years ago. It's, oh, but at least I didn't do it. You're like, you never dealt with that. Oh, yeah, I don't even think about it anymore. Yeah, you do. You just brought it up. Well, maybe a little. We need to resolve that. I don't want to resolve it. I like the fact that I always have that punch card. I like the fact because it's my winning ace in the hole when I get into problems. The problem is anger must be dealt with. Here's the problem with anger. It will set up bitterness and will set up as resentment in your heart. Do you understand that by the time a marriage couple makes it to my office, this is where I'm dealing with? I'm not dealing with, Brother Light, we got an issue and we need you to talk. No, Brother Light, we've got 12 issues that started back 5 years ago or 2 years ago, and I just can't talk to them anymore, and we've got all these issues. Now there is bitterness and resentment. It's already built up, and it's used as a weapon now against each other. That's why when I talk to one of them, I don't even listen to them. If you give you some advice, if you ever talk to messed up married couples, don't ever listen to one at a time and think they're telling you the truth. Don't ever do it, because they're not. They have done set up their agenda and their reason. Now, they may have 90% of the truth. They may have almost all. But I guarantee you, they ain't got it all right. It's done been twisted up in all of that anger. And it's done been, and you don't know how I felt. And you don't know what I went through. And you don't know all this. And you don't know. And let me tell you something else they did. I bet they didn't tell you this. And I bet they didn't say this. And they're going to unload as a weapon on the other person, because bitterness and resentment is already setting in. And it's causing depression on them. I tell them all the time, when you go into this rate, understand it's like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies. You don't believe me? Here's something you can do one day. If you don't believe me, go down to the circuit court or whatever court in Forest. Take a day off, buy you a Coke or whatever you want to do. Sit there right there where they're fixing to have divorce proceedings all day. And you watch all the happy people that walk through there so happy they're getting separated from each other. You won't meet one of them. You know what you will meet? You will meet angry people. You will meet depressed people. You will meet resentful people. You will meet people that have already drawn lines in the sand. And because of it, it's affecting them emotionally in every way. In fact, they don't even deal with each other. They just let their lawyers deal with each other. And they stand there just looking at each other. Yeah. And people make hundreds of thousands of dollars arguing your case. Then it causes the conflict with God. See, once depression comes in, now my relationships, I can't be called a son of God anymore. Nobody's going to recognize me as that, because I am not a peacemaker anymore. I'm not looking for peace. I'm looking for something totally different. Recognize me as a child of God. No one's going to claim me as a child of God. They may look at me and say, "Well, now you had a right to do that." Or they may look at me and say, "You know, I'd have probably done the same thing." They may give you all the excuses, but no one will look at you and say, "Man, I'm going to tell you something. That is as Christ-like as I've ever seen." They won't ever say that about you. You will have sacrificed your Christ-likeness for a world system. That's why Jesus said in that 10th chapter of Mark, from the beginning it was not so. Divorce was not so. Why? Because from the beginning God created man and woman to stay together, to work it out, to work through the conflicts, the communication, work through all the oneness, work through all of these issues. Because it's not about you. It's about being an illustration of me. And I came to this world having done nothing wrong. And yet when I've been beaten and cursed, and I've been killed on a cross, do you understand that I showed God's perfect love to the world? I died for them. And you are my representative to the world. But they lied to me. Don't you think they've lied to me? I had Judas who lied to me, kissed me, and sold me out for 30. How bad have you had it? It is not about you. It's about you being the illustration of me. And when you choose a world's way, understand you sacrifice what God has called me. I go into conflict then with God. I may have a scripture that says God says I can do it, but the problem is I will still be in deep conflict with Him, because God is a God of forgiveness. God is a God of reconciliation. God is a God of a new beginning. And yet here I am saying, I don't want a new beginning. I don't want reconciliation. I don't want to forgive. I don't want to do that. I just want my hurt to go away. And then eventually it can turn violent. Violent toward yourself, violent toward another person. And it will intensify future conflicts. Later, when you go into more relationships, you already go in with a disdain that I cannot trust people. I have already been hurt before. The person I was supposed to trust hurt me. So therefore, I walk into this relationship already with a little bit of distrust. And anger. That's why when you get in the next relationship and they do something, you throw up, "You just like my ex." because you did not resolve the last. Now the next one has to carry the hurt that you already have and the bitterness you already have. And now they've got to live with you what you already have been hurt. And they had nothing to do with it. Look at the person beside you and say, this is good stuff. So, Brother Lott, it won't work for me to walk away. It won't work for me to get divorced. It won't work for... No. It won't. I have people all the time that'll ask me, do I have a right to get divorced? Sure, you have a right. But understand, it'll never bring you what you're looking for. It'll never bring you what you're looking for. Now, don't get me wrong. And when I say this, I'm not telling somebody to stay in a situation you get hit with a bat. I'm not telling you somebody who's mentally or emotionally or you're in a place where you're not safe or your children are not safe. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about we just don't love each other no more. We just get. I'm talking about where you are not in a physical. Peter said, "Listen, you suffer until it is a point of threat, until it is a point where this is not good." And God says, "You need to get out of town." We're not talking about that. I'm talking about where two people, just because their hearts get hard and they say, or one of them says, "I don't love you no more. I don't feel anything anymore. That's a problem, because God says that has nothing to do with anything but the fact that you need to resolve the conflict that is going on. So we've got to resolve conflict. Me and Elise, that's why I said at 10 o'clock at night, I hate it, because we've got to resolve the conflict. We've got to live together. We can't get divorced. It's not even an option. I've got to live with her the rest of my life. Now, I would rather live with her at peace. I would rather have a happy marriage than a messed up marriage. I would rather get along. I'd rather us have fun together than to sit across from all the time and never talk and keep my head down when we eat. And I'd rather get along. So I've got to deal with whatever the conflict is in our life. When you do, here's some pointers. Always speak the truth in love. Now, when I say speak the truth in love, I mean speak the truth in love. I'm not talking about loaded gun. I'm talking about where somebody has taken the time and got the facts of this is what you have done. This is the truth. There's no denying you did this, or I did this, or we did, or you said this. Or because sometimes we get into arguments and we'll say, "You said such a... I didn't say that." Well, you're arguing with somebody that doesn't even know what the argument's about. "Oh, yeah, I know what you said. I know. Well, unless that person is willing to actually get into a decent confrontation with you, you can't resolve it. So first, there must be true facts. This is what you did. This is how you hurt me. This is what was said. Now, when I get that, then I must in love speak what was done. Number two, I must approach carefully. I must approach carefully. My wife, I have to be very careful. She has certain mechanisms that will cause me to lose the conflict. One, crying. That's kind of like, that's a no-no. If we're going to get in a decent confrontation, don't start crying like I've done hit you in the face. Because then I'm going to surrender and not resolve my conflict. I'm just going to say, "Look, just don't cry. We'll make it." So I have to carefully enter into the conflict. I can't just come bawling in, "Oh, I got something I need to talk to you about." I need to be able to set the situation, set the mood, set the timing. I don't care if some of you... You know, me and my wife do our best conflicting when we're driving. I don't have to look at her. I'm looking at the road, but I'm talking. There's no other distractions. And we got as much time as there is road. Now, I don't know where yours is. Yours may be in the morning at breakfast. It may be at night before you go to bed. I don't know. But whatever time you have to set, be careful in setting the place and the time. Because if Elise has been working all day, and she comes walking in the house tired, like, oh, I'm just, and I said, oh, I've been waiting for you to get home. Do you know that is not a good time? The argument, the confrontation is not going to go in a productive way. You are going to have to set the time. One of the key things I always tell people when we go through counseling, I say, how much time do you give each other when you walk through the door? I don't know. And I'll look at the guy and I'll say, how much time do you need to get situated when you walk in? If I just give me an hour. Okay? Then I look at her. Don't bring up anything within the first hour. Give him time to go change clothes, take a shower, whatever it is. Give him time to settle down. Give him time to flip through TV if that's what he wants to do. Whatever it is, give him time to unwind. Now, you've been sitting there waiting for him to bowl through the door because you got it loaded. But don't shoot him right now. A wounded animal is not good right now. He don't know how many times he's already been shot. 3 times a day I've been shot. Now here you go shoot me when I walk through the door. And you can see the guy or the girl, if it's a lady, and she'll say, that's right, just don't do me like that. That's just, you don't know what. A lot of times it's just being careful how you enter into. Don't get me wrong, we've got to confront. But you pick the time, the place. Be careful how you pick the confrontation. Because the goal is to resolve it. The goal is not to win. The goal is not for you to blow up. The goal is to resolve the conflict. Now, the next thing. You're going to have to focus and pray. When you deal with a conflict, let me give you a few pointers. Focus on one issue. Don't focus on 12. Us guys especially, we don't do good like that. You ladies probably do a lot better. I've never been a lady, but I'm sure y'all do a lot better, it seems like, than that. But us guys, you just give us one thing we need to do right now. We can handle that. Make a list on the refrigerator and list them, and we will go down the list. But don't give us 12. We don't even do good with a grocery list of 12. How do you think we're going to do with emotional conflict of 12? We categorize everything. Give us, this box has to be fixed. Now we'll move to this box. And we'll move. Ladies, I understand. It's all in there together. But when you are dealing with conflict, focus on the issue. If the issue is washing the dishes and you're tired and you need somebody to help you do that, then focus on that issue. Don't say, oh, and by the way, you don't do this. And by the way, I need you to do this. And you ever checked the yard lately? I mean, this is speed. Don't do that. Just focus on the issue. Number two, behavior. When you're dealing with one issue, deal with the behavior of the person, not the character of the person. Our tendency is to say, you just like. Every time, this is what you don't deal. Don't punish their character. When I'm having conflicts with Elise, I cannot punish the. If I want to lose, all I have to do is bring up family. You want to lose? It don't matter if you win. You've lost. You stepped over boundaries to where you act just like, That's that brown coming out. And when I do that, it's just like war is on. Gloves are off. So I must deal with the behavior, not the character of the person. Must deal with specifics. I express my feelings, not my judgment. The difference is that, look, I'm tired of washing. I need you to help me. It's not, if you loved me, it's not judging the other person. I know this sounds complicated, but believe me, you know when you're doing it. Stay with the facts, not the motives of the person. and reach a mutual understanding, not who's winning the battle. Don't get into, well, I hope you understand what I said. Get into, do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? Do you understand? Try to have a mutual understanding. Now, number three, when I deal with a conflict, me and Elise have had this discussion, then the last thing has to take place, which is forgiveness. Forgiveness has to happen in our lives. Ephesians 4 and 32 says it this way: be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also forgave you. Remember now, everything's about Christ. Even my forgiveness is not about me. It's about being like who? Jesus. My forgiveness is like being like Jesus. My love is like being like Jesus. My caring is being like Jesus. Everything is being like Jesus. So the question is, where am I not like Jesus? Where am I not like Jesus? Am I not confronting a problem? Am I not dealing with a problem? Am I not forgiving in a problem? Where have I stuck myself to where this last 2 weeks I've been driving myself crazy and I'm so mad at the other person, but yet it isn't getting any better? Where have I stuck myself in the mud? If you have offended somebody, let me give you some hints. If you have offended somebody, here's what you need to do. Be willing to admit, I am wrong. Here's your kind of a sentence. I was wrong. I should have. With Elise, it's the dishes. Elise, I was wrong. I spent way too much time over here, and I apologize. I've left you kind of holding the bag. That's not your fault. That's my fault. I was wrong. Be willing to say, I'm sorry. And when we're sorry, be specific. Don't come up with this, well, I'm sorry if I did something. No, don't play dumb. That's not an apology. I'm sorry I did, bam. And that I caused you to feel what she has said or he has said to you. Because if you've been listening, they've said how it makes them feel. So you repeat it. I have done this and it made you feel hurt, or it made you feel lonely, or it made you feel used, or it made you feel whatever. Repeat it back to them. This works with kids and anybody. I can look at Taylor and I can say, Taylor, I'm sorry that I did this. I know it made you feel, and I am sorry. That goes a long way. Be willing to repent. I know that I hurt you. I didn't wish to hurt you. And I hope that I never, and I'm going to work toward never hurting you this way again. In that requires you being able to say what you're going to do to change. When you resolve a conflict, it doesn't mean we're just not mad at each other no more. It means we have done something. The person that needs forgiveness has within their mind found something that they know they need to incorporate to do it differently. And you need to verbalize that to the other person. What will change about you? Don't just look at them and say, I'm going to try to do better. That gets old. You keep arguing about the same thing and they keep saying they're going to do better. Eventually the person doesn't even hear it. They're just like, yeah, I've heard that 1,000 times. What they're wanting to know is, what will you do? You may say, look, the best I can do is wash dishes on Tuesday. Okay, if that's the best. But there has to be something given specifically where the other person knows that you have meant what you said. Because notice now, by the time it gets to my office, so most of the time, the other person will say to them the same words. I'm sorry. And you know what the view of the other person is? And I'll look at them and I'll say, how many times have you said that? I don't know. I bet a bunch. I bet you just keep saying every time you, because you don't really mean that you're going to change. You're just sorry you keep getting caught. But the hard part is what will change in your life. What are you going to do differently than you have not done before? And some people just are not sorry. Thus, marriages end. If a person keeps saying, I'm sorry, well, then change. Well, I don't know if I can change. Well, then you're not sorry. If you're broken about something, then you know what? You'll do something. And those are the hardest times in my life where I'm talking in conflict with this person. Look, you say you're sorry about this, but what are you willing to do? What do you want me to do? Be careful if you ask that. Because now you're giving yourself to the other person. Don't just throw it out like that as something easy, because they already have in their mind what you need to do. You need to have in your mind when you resolve conflict, here's what I'm going to try to do. Here's what I'm going to, I promise you, I am going to do better at this. You don't mean you gotta say, I'll never make a mistake again. I promise it'll never happen again. No, now you're getting into deep water. You just need to let the person know that I am going to work so that next week, tomorrow, when they're watching you, they can honestly look at themselves and say, they're trying. That's all they want to know, that you listened to them, that you meant what you said, that you're trying. Whether it's a woman, man, it doesn't matter. If Elise tells me, Tim, I'm sorry. And I'm like, okay. But it's the next day when I see her doing something, I'm like, all right. She meant that. It's your actions that will determine it. Let me give you some things that forgiveness is not. When you grant forgiveness to someone, now the person has asked for forgiveness, right? They've told you they're going to do better. But now you're the person this time that has to forgive them. You have the harder job. It is not this. It's not a repression or pretending that something did not happen. Now, if the person who's asking forgiveness is pretty weak on this stuff, what they're... But a person who's sincere in asking forgiveness understands that the other person now has a memory of things that I have done, and I must now retrain their mind to see me doing something different. Number two, it's not conditional. If you forgive somebody, it is not conditional that they live up to some certain level or something unless they have told you that they will do better at this and they will promise. That's why I told you, if you're going to ask for forgiveness, don't go jumping off into super deep water saying, well, I'll never do it again. My dad used to make that mistake all the time. Jane, I'll never do it again. And buddy, a month later, she called him. You promised me. You said you'd never. I know I did. I'm sorry. I shouldn't. You have already put yourself out in such deep water. When you honestly are going to make a change that you know is a one step. I know I can make this step in my life. I know I need to make this step in my life. And I need your help. Notice what Peter says in Matthew. And Peter came and said to him, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Seven times? And the Lord said, no, seven times 70. It's 492 times. When you choose to forgive, it's not conditional. If you forgive somebody, you just forgive them. And if the person is telling you, look, I'm doing the best I can, I'm sorry, I'm going to do my best. Now, they haven't promised you they're going to, but if they just ask for forgiveness, just forgive me. And that's all that they've got. Then if you forgive them, understand, that is forgiveness. It's not conditional. There's certain things about Elise, do you understand, that probably will never change? And she'll probably ask me for forgiveness on certain things for the rest of her life. There's things in my life that I will constantly, probably the day I die, still say, I know, Elise, I'm a lot. I'm sorry. I go brain dead sometimes. She understands that when she forgives me of certain little things in my life, my sometimes attitude or my know-it-allness or whatever it may be, then at that moment she is releasing me. Releasing me totally. Now, there's something else forgiveness is not. It's not forgetting. Nobody in this room is asking you to forget what somebody's done to you. The next thing, it's not impossible. And finally, it's not an automatic cure for the hurt. There's some things that you can do that even though the person says, I'm trying to forgive you, I'm trying to... Do you understand? The hurt overrides everything. Sometimes there's people that end up in my office, and even though one woman's saying, I'm sorry, they have no understanding of the depth of the hurt that is in the other person. I don't know how far that person will have to go or how long that person will have to go before they finally set. Now, they'll look at the person and say, look, I'm not mad at you. Understand, I'm not angry at you anymore, but I'm hurt. And see, if you don't know that hurt, then you can't understand that hurt. If you don't grasp that hurt, then it's hard for us. We just look at people like, well, you ought to just get on past that. You ought to just get over that. You ought to just... You don't understand that hurt. It's not saying I won't. It's not saying it will. It's just saying right now, it's a slow process of getting day by day, rebuilding the trust that I used to have. There's a lot that goes into conflict. When you grant forgiveness, here's how you do it. If you really want to forgive somebody today as we leave this place, if you really want to be forgiven, we know how. We've got to go to them. We've got to deal. But if you want to forgive, here's how you do it. Number one, you do it privately first. You go into your prayer closet and first you ask God to forgive you of all of your sins. It is the place in which we have to start. Remember what the Bible says, we forgive others because Christ has forgiven us. I have to forgive people because I have sinned too. Now, my hurt right now may blind me to the fact that mine ain't as bad as theirs and da-da-da-da-da. I understand all that, but I have messed up too. So it begins with me in my prayer closet. It begins with me saying, Lord, I am so angry with that person right now. And then God looking at me and saying, Tim, how angry do you think I get at you sometimes? Yeah, but God, I'm not like, well, maybe I am. Tim, this may surprise you, but I may even see you as worse than them. Because maybe I know that they don't understand me the way you do. They hadn't walked with me for 30 years, Tim. They don't know better. You claim to know me. You claim to walk with me. You've read my book so many times, but yet here you are unable to forgive. God, forgive me. Forgive me for my hard heart. Forgive me for the way I feel. Forgive me. It has to start in a closet with myself. That's why I said revival is so hard. Because listen to me, it requires a humbling of self. It's not the other person that has to humble. It's me that has to humble. It's me that has to be broken, not the other person. Anger says I want them broken for what they've done. Humbleness says, Lord, break me for how I feel. Break me for how I feel. I shouldn't feel this way. This is not about me. It's not. It's about you and them. It's about something bigger. Forgive me for all that I have done. Then, when I have settled that in my heart, then I have the attitude and the spirit. Anybody know when you've prayed through? Anybody prayed long enough where you know you've asked forgiveness, your heart is right now, you can look at that other person, you can do, and it'll shock them when you are right, because they're expecting you to go off and they're expecting some bomb to hit them, and then you just come at them and crying worse than they are, and you walk up to them and you do the second thing. you do specifically to the other person what you're forgiving them for. Once God has forgiven me, then I can go. And don't do just some random, don't just walk up to them and say, "Oh, I forgive you." No, just like the person has to specifically ask for forgiveness, you have to specifically tell them, "Listen, this is what you did, and it hurt. But I want you to know with all of my heart, I don't hold any grudge. I don't hold any I forgive you. And if we meet on the street tomorrow, understand I'll hug your neck as though nothing ever happened. Don't ever pull away from me because I will never hold that against you ever." The forgiver is the hardest role to play. Because I'm the one with all the ammunition. I'm the one with all the reason I shouldn't. I'm the one with all the I don't have to's. But yet, if I'm going to be happy and live and enjoy life, I have to be the forgiver in life. Out of 17 years of pastoring, you know how many conflicts? Do you know how many people I've bumped into? Do you know how many? You know how you still survive? You know how you still keep going? You know how you go into Walmart and still never have enemies or anything? You know how you do it? You forgive people all along. And you make it clear, look, me and you may never be at the same church. Me and you may not get along, but we will always be friends. I will never do. And they give you that look like you don't mean that. Yeah, I do. Honestly, it doesn't matter about that. I am not going to wake up every day. I am not going to avoid you for the rest of my life. I am not going to let the devil drive a wedge there. I forgive everything. Whatever was said, whatever was done, it's done. I moved on past it. I'm gone. I got bigger fish to fry. Third thing you have to do is this. Do it generously. Do it generously. Make sure that the other person understands that you are through with it. This is very important. Make sure the other person knows that you are through with it. Whatever happened. And fourth, do it graciously. This is my favorite line when I deal with people, whatever their problem. And I used to ask God all the time why He sent so many people to me. And He said, "It's for this one reason, Tim." He said, "Because you're willing to live where they live." When you resolve a conflict, this is the greatest line you'll ever say. You will look at them and you will say, "I've done things in my life too." It's not enough to just say, "I forgive you." It has to be finalized with the, "I have made mistakes. I'm not perfect. Look, if you knew my stories, yours wouldn't seem so big." You know what that does? That releases people from the guilt and the shame, and they don't feel like they're the only one in the world. The world holds them. The devil punishes them by things, by saying, "Nobody's as bad as you. Nope, you don't deserve to live. God's not going to love you." It is when you put that to the test and tell people, "I've been there." If the devil's done one thing to destroy the church, and he's done it well, it's caused us, it's him causing us to hide the fact that we once were sinners too. And the world feels like they're a million miles from us, when in fact they're only one prayer from being what we are. "Oh, but a lot, I've been living this." Look, I'm three generations. If you want to call cloud in, I mean, I got as much cloud as anybody. None of it means anything. I was a sinner saved by grace. I've made mistakes just like you. If it was not for the grace of God, I don't know where I would be today. I wish they could come up and sing that song one more time. Where would I be? You only know. You see through eyes of love. Where would I be? A hopeless case. An empty place. If not for grace. Yeah, what you did was wrong. But thank goodness there is forgiveness. Thank goodness there is somebody we can run to. And the greatest line you'll ever tell somebody is this: if I forgive you, and I'm just flesh and blood, how much more does God forgive you, who sent His Son to die for you? When we reconcile, when we become peacemakers, the world is changed. When you leave here today, my prayer is that you don't become a peacekeeper. It's not that you become bashful or withdrawn or throw your little temper tantrums to get your way. My prayer is this: is that you will learn peacemaking. If somebody has hurt you, take the time, get the facts, put yourself to where you can just cry on a drop of a hat. Go to them and resolve the conflict. If you have been hurt by somebody, and you say, "Pastor, you don't know how that did," and they probably never gonna forgive, never gonna ask for forgiveness. They probably don't even think they did anything. Can I tell you something? We use the empty chair all the time. And what basically it is this: when we do conflict resolution, that person's never gonna come and talk to me, so I'm gonna sit in this empty chair across from me and I'm gonna imagine that they are there. It may be your mom, it may be your dad, it may have been an ex-husband, it may be somebody from your past, but you just imagine them in that chair. And then you forgive them. It may be your mom. You say, "Mom, I've carried a lot of anger with me. You yanked us around and we went through this. And I lived through so much stuff with you, and I want to tell you something. I got so angry at you. But I want you to know that I forgive you." Because you probably didn't even realize you did it. You probably don't even realize how bad it hurt. It was me. And I want to let you know I let you go. And I don't hold any grudge or any... I've seen people do that in rooms. I've set up chairs and let them do that. And you just watch them bawl. Looking at an empty chair, and I thought, how much anger have you toted around? How much hurt have you carried? How much resentment waiting for that phone to ring? They're going to have to call me. They're going to have to forgive. They're going to have to beg for forgiveness. No, it's drinking poison, and it's hoping the other person dies. You got to forgive. It's our strength as a Christian. It's what causes people to watch us and say, "If I ever met a Christian, you must be one." Because our Master was a forgiver. Our God, His characteristic above all others, is forgiveness. And today, we have a choice. We can carry it. We can blow up, eternalize it, or compromise. We can resolve it. I hope that as we end this series on marriage, I hope it'll make yours better. I have the greatest marriage, I think, in the world. And it's not perfect by a long shot. But there's certain things we have integrated into our relationship that cause us never to hit rocks. that's going to sink the ship. And I hope that you'll integrate this. We understand we're different. We understand we got to keep talking. We got to keep relating. We got to keep communication going. And when we hit those impasses where we just don't see eye and it's just done hit the fan, we can't go to our corners and wait for the other one. We have to resolve it. We've got to be honest and love and tell each other what we really feel and what really happened. And I hope that whatever relationship, married, friendship, whatever it is, whether it's your parents, whatever it is, I hope you have the greatest one. God intends for you to. And if you do it by God's system, you'll have relationships that can last a lifetime. That will be awesome in every aspect. Will you bow your heads? Father,